The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm Brent Nuchtigal and we're coming to you today from the beautiful campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College, located in Edstone, England. Mr. Stephen Flurry, your regular host, is attending to some of his duties as director of the youth camp that's currently winding up here on campus, and he asked me to take the show today. So instead of focusing on England, we are going to venture back into the Middle East. That's what I probably know. The area of, that I know more than any other area of the world. So we're going to talk about that, and particularly the city of Jerusalem, Israel. And as we talk about Jerusalem, we're going to look at one of the most pivotal and exciting prophecies concerning that city, and one that actually announces the countdown to the coming of the Messiah. So this prophecy that we'll cover today is found in the book of Zechariah, the second last book of the Old Testament by the King James Reckoning. It was written over 2,500 years ago by a man who actually had a pretty big role in the construction of the city of Jerusalem after the Jews returned back from their captivity. And yet, he wrote in his book that that city was once again going to be conquered. Here he was building up Jerusalem once again after it was ruined by the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar, and he was writing that it would be destroyed once again. Now, this was an extremely unpopular message towards the end of his life, obviously, and some believe that it actually got him killed by his own people, that is, the prophet Zechariah. However, he wasn't writing for his day. As we know, a lot, most of the prophecy in the Bible is for the time we're living in right now. He wasn't talking about the Roman takeover of Jerusalem or destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. He was writing for us. He was writing for the time that we live in right now. Now, it's really exciting to watch these prophecies develop in the city of Jerusalem in the tandem with news events as well that are coming out of Jerusalem and Israel, because we can see how close we are to the fulfillment of this prophecy. We can understand by looking at the news and looking at this prophecy in Zechariah how close we are to the coming of the Messiah. And we can't think that what happens in Jerusalem necessarily won't affect us, even though it's on the other side of the planet. This prophecy that takes place that we're going to cover today does concern Jerusalem, but it's going to affect every single man on this planet, woman, child, everybody. And it's going to have a very specific effect on the English-speaking peoples of the United States and the British Commonwealth. So if you can hear and understand what I'm saying right now, this is going to affect you, this prophecy. Before we go over some of the news relating to this prophecy, we're going to go to the prophecy itself and see what it says. It's found over in the last chapter of the book of Zechariah, chapter 14, and we're going to read the first two verses. Verse 1 says this. It reveals the context of this prophecy. It says, quote, "Behold, the day of the Eternal comes, and your spoil should be devoured in the midst of you." So the day of the Eternal, it talks about, that's referring to the final year of man's rule over man before God returns, before God rules. That's what it's referring to. That's the context. And let's jump into verse 2 now. It's more specific. Now, if you want more information on this, you need to read Jerusalem in Prophecy, the booklet Jerusalem in Prophecy. We've got a couple of promos for you during this program about that book by Mr. Gerald Flurry, because it goes into far greater depth than I can and makes it probably much more clear than I can over the radio. So you need to request this book, Jerusalem in Prophecy, to understand this specific prophecy we're going to cover today in more detail. But verse 2 says this. So the context again is this final day of the Eternal before God rules, the last year of man ruling over man. But what leads up to that time? Verse 2 explains. "For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, And the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished. And half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. So now I'm going to quote directly from Mr. Fleury here, and he explains it well. He says, note the big overview Zechariah gives. He says there are three phases to this crisis. In this verse 2, there's three phases that lead up to the coming of the Messiah. Zechariah, he says, starts at the second coming of Christ, the third phase, and works his way backward chronologically. The verse starts with Christ conquering the European and Asian powers who are gathered together for battle. We're not going to discuss that. But then he says there is a semicolon, which means that all these events in verse 2 are linked closely together. The first semicolon introduces the second phase of this violent time. The city shall be taken, the houses rifled, and women ravished. This is when the king of the north, Europe, conquers the whole city of Jerusalem. Also, America and Britain, shortly after he conquers the king of the south. Now, again, we're not going to go into that, but these are very specific prophecies that you can read up about in that booklet. We're going to focus on this final phase, or really the first phase, since it's in reverse chronological order, this verse. He says, then there is another semicolon. This is the first phase. The first phase of all these events that lead up to the return of Christ. He says, the first phase when half of Jerusalem goes into captivity. He says, suggesting some violence in the process. He then writes, this first phase could happen at any time. The Palestinians, backed by Iran, will almost certainly do this violent deed. Then he talks about the context. He says, so why are these three events so closely linked? I believe there is only one logical answer. The fall of half of Jerusalem triggers a violent and massive chain reaction that leads to Christ's second coming. So really, end quote, if we're going to talk about what we could be watching for in this, on this whole planet, over this whole planet, that we would know that at the end of it, or that once it happens, that we are on a countdown to the coming of the Messiah, the return of Jesus Christ, it is this one event, half of the city of Jerusalem going into captivity, being taken. It triggers a series of events that will most definitely lead to the coming of the Messiah. This is what your Bible says. Now, when we come back after just covering that prophecy, we are going to look at some recent events in the news that show us how close this first phase is to taking place. The taking of half of Jerusalem. Don't go away.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. They call it the City of Peace. But it is filled with violence. Yesterday, bloody crusades and sieges. Today, terrorism, rocket attacks, and stabbings. Intense international pressure, but no diplomatic solutions. This is Jerusalem. No city has suffered like it. Will there ever be peace? God says yes. There will be peace in Jerusalem, and not just for the Jews. It will be a peace that spreads to all people. How will God bring peace to Jerusalem? Request your free copy of Jerusalem in Prophecy to find out. The answer comes straight from your Bible. Peace is coming soon. Act today. Please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG FM or over the air in Edmond, Oklahoma on 101.3 FM. Before the break, we were talking about this specific prophecy in the book of Zechariah that leads to a number of phases which finish up with Christ's return to bring peace finally to the city of Jerusalem and over this whole earth. Now, it's important, before we begin, to just cover some of the news. We're going to just look at some of the history here as well with Israel and Jerusalem, because already we have seen prophecy fulfilled in the state of Israel. Now, the Bible is filled with prophecies about an end time Israel. And that includes not the nations in the Middle East, but rather some of those 10 tribes that went into captivity before the Jews did, and that being the United States and the British Commonwealth. But the Bible is also filled with prophecies about an end time Judah. And those prophecies about Judah are interesting because the Jews, as we know, they make up that tribe of Judah until 1948, when the Jews had their own state, which they called Israel. Those prophecies in the Bible about Judah couldn't have come true. They couldn't have come true. And yet we have the state of Israel today allowing those prophecies to come true to concern that nation of Judah. That tribe of Judah. Now, it would have been nice on May 14th, 1948, as the Jews were coming together to name their state, to help us out in looking at biblical prophecy and who is and what concerns which end-time nation, if they didn't call their nation Israel. Instead, they might have called it Judah, and that would have been more accurate because they are the people that make up the state of Israel today. The state of Israel today is not all the tribes of Israel. And when the Bible refers to Israel in the end time prophecy, it's not necessarily referring to the nation of Israel. It really is that the truth is that the nation of Israel today is made up of the Jews and or the tribe of Judah. And you can read a book on that, The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong. Request that. It opens up your Bible to your understanding of prophecy in your Bible like no other text will. Now, it's interesting, though, because this very prophecy we're talking about today concerns the nation of Israel today. And prior to 1948, this prophecy couldn't have taken place because the nation of Israel didn't even exist. The state of Israel had to exist for this prophecy to take place. But also, this prophecy indicates that Jerusalem, in this end time, would have had to come under Israeli rule. It is today, but it wasn't always. For the 19 years from 1948 till 1967, East Jerusalem and the entire area known as the West Bank today belonged to Jordan, not Israel. But Bible prophecy shows in this prophecy here in Zechariah 14 verse 2 that the fact that they are going to lose half of the city, that they had to at some point gain the full city of Jerusalem. And prior to 1967, they didn't have that. So really what happened in the Six-Day War, allowing Israel to unify Jerusalem under its command, under its leadership, was also prophesied in this scripture as well. Now, it's really interesting just to look at this history of the Six-Day War and how Israel came into to be able to control the entire city. Jerusalem, for Israel, the whole city, wasn't their goal at the start of the Six-Day War. The West Bank, conquering the West Bank, wasn't their goal at the start of the Six-Day War. The fight for Jordanian territory, including East Jerusalem, was the result of being attacked by Jordan in the city. Even King Hussein, the ruler of Jordan at the time, didn't want to do it. He was pressured in joining the Arab coalition to fight against the Israelis in the Six-Day War. He only signed the Joint Defense Pact with Egypt 5 days before the war broke out. And then a few days before that, the King of Jordan, he talked to Western diplomats saying that the Arabs weren't ready for a war against Israel. Then just before Jordan entered the war, Israeli Prime Minister Levi Eshkol, he said this.
We appeal to King Hussein and to other neighbors to stay their hands, and Israel would do likewise.
So you heard Levi Eshkol there at the time, before Jordan had started fighting, that he said, if you stay your hand, we're not going to fight against you. We're not going to take East Jerusalem. We're not going to take the West Bank. And if Jordan didn't, then to this day, Jordan would have been in East Jerusalem, most likely, because the Israelis wouldn't have attacked them. But Hussein did end up attacking. He received a phone call from Egypt's leader, who was the strongest man in the Arab world, Gamal Abdel Nasser, at the time, and he told him that planes were currently successfully bombing Israel. That's what Nasser told him, which was a lie. They weren't. And because they were already successfully bombing Israel, which they weren't, Hussein was told by Nasser to start attacking West Jerusalem as soon as he could and gain as much territory from the Jews before a ceasefire was imposed on them by the international community. And minutes later, Hussein obeyed and fired on the Jews. Therefore, the Jews fought back. And within a few days, they had defended the city. They had pushed the Jordanians out of Jerusalem, out of East Jerusalem, and all the way back across the Jordan River. And at the end of the war, both the United States and even Russia, who supported both sides of this war, they agreed that at least for the time being, Israel did not have to give back this land until peace was secure. And that's something that remains elusive up until this day. But nevertheless, God said, we're just going back to see that history, because we've already seen fulfillment of Bible prophecy here with the Israelis capturing all of the city of Jerusalem. And even in the circumstances around surrounding it, with the way that Hussein didn't want to attack, but he was forced into it, Jordan didn't want to bring on this war with Israel, yet they were forced into it. Really shows, you can see God behind the scenes here, ensuring that Jerusalem would be conquered by the Israelis. And therefore, this prophecy of them losing half of it would be allowed to take place in the future. So let's go to the news now and look at some upcoming events, really, that could easily rip East Jerusalem out of the hands of the Jews. That's what we're talking about here. Half the city right now is the East Jerusalem, that's mainly made up by the Palestinians, and West Jerusalem is where most of the Jews live. And in East Jerusalem, we have the Israelis looking after most the Jerusalem municipality that does look after East Jerusalem at this time. So they're under Israeli rule. Yet that is going to change. Your Bible says that that is going to change. And how is that going to come about? Well, there are some news items that we're going to cover here to show how that could be could happen in the very near future. I want to start with this article. It's from just a few days ago, and it's from Haaretz, an Israeli news source, normally a left-leaning news source, and it's entitled, "Looming Palestinian Municipal Elections Could Be a Final Blow for Abbas." So the title isn't that important here, but just the news of what's coming up here in the next few months is very important. Amos Harel starts off this way. He says, Palestinian elections for more than 400 municipal and local councils are scheduled to take place on October 8th in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Then he continues, it appears as if Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas was dragged into the elections without sufficient foresight. Presidential and parliamentary elections have not been held in over a decade, ever since Hamas surprised the Palestinian Authority and the experts by winning the 2006 parliamentary election. So what does all that mean? Well, just to make it clear, we as far as Palestinian politics goes, we have two main factions, Fatah, which is that currently rules over the West Bank, which is this territory that Jordan relinquished or that Israel fought for, including East Jerusalem, in the Six-Day War. That's one of the Palestinian territories right now. And Mahmoud Abbas, as the president or the leader of Fatah and the leader of the Palestinian people, is stationed there. But then we have the other Palestinian territory of the Gaza Strip, which borders on Egypt and is located on the Mediterranean coast. Now that area is ruled over by the other Palestinian faction, Hamas. Hamas is the more violent of the two. Fatah, of course, does encourage encourage incitement against Israelis and encourages a lot of their people to commit terrorist acts against Israelis. Yet they have been Israel has been able to work with them to secure some of the West Bank, whereas Hamas doesn't work with Israel. Hamas has, from the very beginning, is committed to Israel's destruction. We'll even read some of their own charter a little bit later. But what he's saying here in this article is that for the past 10 years, there hasn't been a municipal election or a parliamentary election in the Palestinian areas that has involved both Hamas and Fatah. Why? Because Hamas wins. The more violent, the more extreme of the two wins against the more moderate Fatah. We saw this in the Gaza Strip in 2006. What happened back then? 2005, we had the Israeli withdrawal out of the Gaza Strip. People were pronouncing land for peace. If you get out of our land, we will give you peace. That is the promise. That's what the whole Israeli-Palestinian peace process is predicated on. That doctrine. That false doctrine, as we saw in 2006 and 2005. So the Israelis, under the leadership of Ariel Sharon at the time, did a very painful thing and removed over 6,000 people from the Gaza Strip and said, okay, we shall remove out of the Gaza Strip. You promised us peace. You give us peace. Instead of waiting for peace first, they removed themselves. And then what happened? In 2005, we had Israelis moved out of the Gaza Strip. 2006, there was a democratic election in this Palestinian territory of the Gaza Strip. And who was voted in? At the time, Fatah thought that they would win. They thought that they would win this election, but instead the people voted for Hamas, the more violent of the two, in 2006. And then in 2007, Hamas started slaughtering their enemy, which wasn't Israel at the time, which was all the Fatah people left in the Gaza Strip, started dropping them off buildings, throwing them off buildings. People probably remember some of that footage. And ever since, Hamas has ruled over the Gaza Strip. Now, what would happen if there was a similar type election in the West Bank? What would happen? Now, there are polls that are out saying that it's about 50-50 right now between the support that Hamas would have and the support that Fatah would have in such an election. And that's interesting because the polls were wrong last time as well. Pollsters haven't had the best job in the past few years, as we've seen in a number of different presidential, prime ministerial, municipal, parliamentary elections around the world. And the risk is that they might not be accurate once again. But what's the big deal? What if Hamas wins these elections in the West Bank? Well, there are fears that they will bring to Jerusalem, to the areas surrounding the West Bank, what they've brought to the areas surrounding the Gaza Strip. Violence. Rockets. The town of Sderot, we have an avid trumpet reader in that city of 20,000 people, borders the Gaza Strip, and they are under constant rocket attack. It's a place where you walk down the street, and they've got buses that come around, public transport, and yet all the bus stations or the bus areas that are usually a post in the ground telling you what numbers are coming of the buses, or maybe a little bit of shelter for rain, are bomb shelters. They're made out of concrete. Playgrounds in this town of Sderot, which borders the Gaza Strip, where Hamas is in power, they've tried to morph types of tunnels. There's a video of a tunnel being made out of made to look like a big snake that the kids can run into. Now, this isn't just a playground idea where kids can go in a tunnel. No, this is where the children run when there is a rocket attack against them from Hamas, from the Gaza Strip. And how long do they have to seek shelter? 15 seconds. 15 seconds is all they have from the time that the code red siren sounds. So Israelis no doubt fear what would happen if Hamas got in power in the West Bank. They would fear that all these major cities, really, that are on the border of the West Bank, including Jerusalem, that they would be under constant threat of constant attack. And that's why people are worried. So if Mahmoud Abbas then, if he, the leader of Fatah, kind of understood that Hamas did have a pretty good following and that they might win these municipal elections in the West Bank, why did he announce them? Well, I'm going to continue with this article here from Haaretz. It says here, mock council elections were held in the West Bank in 2012. So there were some elections in 2012, but Hamas decided not to participate. And Fatah was so unpopular that cynics said it managed to lose to itself in some of those cities. So Hamas decided they weren't going to even participate in the last elections. 4 years have passed since then, the article continues, and Abbas decided to gamble and called new elections, perhaps in the expectation that Hamas would once again decide to sit them out. But Hamas surprised him and announced that it would participate. It's going to participate in these next elections. In the West Bank, Hamas is likely to run joint lists with politicians who don't necessarily identify with, but that will be enough for it to pose a real threat to the political standing of the Palestinian Authority. So what they're saying is, while Hamas won't be so overt and putting their violent brigades, those that are firing off the rockets, on the list to be elected, that they will have their people nevertheless in those elections to try and wrest the power away from Fatah in the West Bank. Now, this is really interesting as well, because in the West, we and Europe and the United States and all over the world, democracy is championed as the solution to almost everything. And yet, what we saw in 2006 with Hamas's exploitation of the democratic process, in the sense that there was a democratic election and they won. I mean, democracy here in with a state with a majority of the people are for a violent takeover of a country next door, that's not going to end up well. This process happened in Egypt back in 2012, when there was a prime ministerial election. After the United States pretty much forced Mr. Mubarak out of power, and power to the people. Yeah, power to the people. Let's have an election, a democratic election, and see what happens. Well, Muslim Brotherhood leader Mohamed Morsi came into power. Thankfully, he was removed from power shortly thereafter. In Turkey, we've seen something recently as well. You would think that the majority of the Turks wouldn't want a leader that takes away their freedoms in power. And yet, earlier this year, they voted in Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Again, another Islamist leader. And then it happened in the Gaza Strip in 2006. Would we be surprised if it happened in the West Bank? I dare say that we would. These groups tend to exploit democracy for their own benefit. They don't agree with democratic ideals, but they'll use it to get into power for sure, and then watch out. Now, this next article here I have is from Breitbart, and it's entitled "Exclusive: Palestinian Authority Fears Hamas Will Win October's Municipal Elections in the West Bank." Now, why are we covering these news stories? Why am I so concerned about Hamas being in charge of the West Bank? It's because Fatah basically has been in charge of the West Bank for 30, 40 years, and not half of Jerusalem hasn't fallen yet. It hasn't yet. If we get Hamas, the more violent of the two, in power in the West Bank, they are going to push for half of Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, to be their capital of their Palestinian state. They're going to push for that. And they're going to use all the means necessary to do so. And it looks like they'll probably have some support from outside powers, of course, in the Middle East to accomplish that. Back to this article here from Breitbart. Palestinian Authority fears Hamas will win October's municipal elections. This is towards the end of the article. It says this, a senior Fatah source told Breitbart Jerusalem that, quote, calling the municipal elections is likely to backfire once again. Elections are a good and democratic thing, but not that good if they open the door to Hamas's return to the West Bank. It may also play into Israel's hands, who will claim that Hamas won the elections and is therefore unable to negotiate with a terrorist entity. Probably is what they'll say, yes. So then he was asked this. He was asked why he is so sure Hamas would win. And this is what a Fatah source said. He said the divisions within Fatah, the infighting, the flagrant corruption, and there is a lot of corruption, that group receives more foreign aid than any other entity on the planet. And yet, I don't know whether they have an audit or not, but if they try and audit where all that money goes, it is lining the pockets of their leaders. So he says there's corruption in Fatah. All of these will serve as ammunition for Hamas, and it will not fall on deaf ears. Hamas already said that they wouldn't run independently, but in a coalition with technocrats and local leaders. And he said that was always their way to package their merchandise. People can vote for Hamas policies without thinking they're voting for Hamas, whatever it means for Israel and its likely retaliation. They're experts at it. They've done it with great success in the previous round of local elections when they won virtually every big city, and only after the coup in Gaza, the PA disbanded the West Bank municipalities ruled by Hamas. So what it's saying here is the last time they had municipal elections back in 2000, and I think before, it was like in 2004 or something like that, in the West Bank, Hamas did very well. But then when Hamas took over the Gaza Strip, booting out all the Fatah people, then Fatah did the same thing in the West Bank. I know it sounds a little confusing, but I hope to just paint a picture of how divided the Palestinian people and how divided the Palestinian leadership is as well. Because you just hear a lot of the time in Western press about how only if Israel would do this and only if Israel would do that. Well, if Israel did a lot of those things and gave a lot of concessions to the Palestinians, you would have a fight on your hands between the Palestinians for that power, even as we're seeing to this day. And then finally, this quote here from the Fatah source. He says, these elections will be Hamas's ticket back to the West Bank under the cloak of local lists that will in fact usher in Hamas's religious, political, and social activities. Now that's scary. That's scary. If he's saying that this municipal election that's going to take place in October is going to bring in the ideals of Hamas to the West Bank, right on the border of Jerusalem. And it's something that really we've been watching for at thetrumpet.com, and we've been led to watch for from our editor, for Hamas's takeover of the West Bank, because it has everything to do with half of Jerusalem falling. Fatah is likely not going to be the one that causes that to happen. It's going to be a change. There will be a change of leadership in the West Bank, which will lead to half of Jerusalem falling. And that countdown again, to the end of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, to the end of all conflict. That is the very starting point. This half of Jerusalem falling predicated upon a Hamas takeover in the West Bank. So when we see news stories showing and saying that Hamas is likely going to take over the West Bank, we can get excited by that. Not excited for the violence that will come, but excited for the end result. Excited that prophecy will be fulfilled. And that's what it really does mean to watch and pray. Now, there's one other source here I'd like to talk about, and this just came out this week. It's very interesting because we have Hamas saying that it's going to participate in the municipal elections throughout the West Bank. And then the Palestinian Authority came out and said that they are considering proposing the creation of a municipal council in East Jerusalem. So at this point, Israel has not allowed this. There is no governing body of Palestinians over East Jerusalem because, according to the Israeli government, Jerusalem is the unified capital of Israel. It will always be that way. It'll stay that way. And we're going to have a municipality with Palestinians and Israelis that look after the combined unified city. We're not going to divide the city. And yet the Palestinians right now, pre this election, are thinking about establishing their own municipal governing body over East Jerusalem. Just a very interesting move and something that the international community might support. So that's what we're looking at right now, facing us in the future. We've talked about a Hamas takeover probably taking place here in the West Bank for years, and it looks like over in the next few months, Hamas is positioning themselves to do it democratically. To do it democratically, just like they did in the Gaza Strip. So what is Hamas about? Now, we're probably going to see Hamas be legitimized in the world scene. They might, for the time being, have their technocrats in power, to have their technocratic leaders on these lists to be voted into power, not the leader of their brigades. And we could probably see that the international community is going to encourage Israel to work with them. Because, I mean, who are they going to work with for peace? If Fatah is gone, there is only one other leadership body that they can work with, and it'll have to be Hamas. Now, Hamas hasn't renounced their founding charter. They still stick to that in every way. So we can't be fooled what we might see on the news. If you see the word Hamas, this is what they believe. This is Article 7 of the Hamas Charter. It's a really big document. I didn't read. Well, I read a lot of it this morning, but I only just picked this one section. Article 7 of this charter. It says this: although these links are far apart, and although the continuity of jihad was interrupted by obstacles placed in the path of jihad fighters by those who circle in the orbit of Zionism, the Islamic resistant movement aspires to realize the promise of Allah no matter how long it takes. So it's saying that there have been difficulties along the way in this route of jihad against Zionism. Zionism, just the fact that Israel has a right to exist in the Middle East, that is Zionism. And they're going to fight it by the promise of and realize the promise of Allah. And this is what it continues to say. The prophet, that is Muhammad, Allah's prayer and peace be upon him says, this is what Muhammad prophesied, or he not prophesied, sorry, this is what he prayed. He said, quote, "The hour of judgment shall not come until the Muslims fight the Jews and kill them, so that the Jews hide behind trees and stones. And each tree and stone will say, quote, O Muslim, O servant of Allah, there is a Jew behind me. Come and kill him." That is quoting from the Hadith from Muhammad. Islam isn't a violent religion. Well, that's one of their tenets right here. And it's saying that wherever the Jews hide, God is going to help us find them. He's going to make inanimate objects speak to us to help kill them. So that was Muhammad, but it's also in the Hamas Charter. And there's other parts. I just hadn't read that part before, so that's the one I chose to bring to you. But there's other parts of the Hamas Charter that are even worse than that. That group, Hamas, exists for one reason, and that reason is to destroy Israel. Now, 2 weeks ago, there was a clip that surfaced of the type of institutionalized hatred that is bred into the Palestinians. Now, this clip, it's about 3 minutes, so I would listen to the whole thing. Don't tune out. But it takes place not in Gaza, where Hamas is, but in the West Bank, right where these municipal elections are going to be taking place in October. And this is the type of education that is given to the people in the West Bank from their parents. Take a listen.
I've just watched a video that shook me to the core of my being. In just a few seconds, it shows why our conflict persists. So here's a short snippet. A Palestinian father holds up his four-year-old son. He pleads with Israeli border police to kill his own child. He shouts, "Shoot this little boy," his boy. He pushes his young son forward towards the soldiers and screams, "Kill him! Shoot him!" The boy pauses. He's scared. Any child would be. He turns back, looking at his father for guidance. With his shirt tightly tucked into his bright red shorts, the boy ambles forwards towards the soldiers. One of them extends his hand in friendship. The boy gives him a high five. It's hard to make a four-year-old hate. Imagine your own child at that age. Think of his smile. Imagine her laugh. Picture the unrestrained joy and innocence that only a child possesses. Encouraging someone to murder a child, let alone your own child, is probably the most inhumane thing a person can do. What did this child do to deserve this? The answer is nothing. He's innocent. He should be in a playground. He should be in the sun, laughing with other children. Sadly, this father's crime is not an isolated example. In Gaza, Hamas runs summer camps that teach children to value death over life, suicide kindergarten camps. The Palestinian Ministry of Education in Ramallah recently organized an event for students to honor terrorists who murdered three civilians. 2 weeks ago, the Palestinian Authority's official newspaper praised teenage terrorists and wrote that death as a martyr is the path to excellence and greatness. That's a direct quote. Palestinian and Israeli children deserve better. They deserve to live. They deserve to live in peace. Children are not cannon fodder. They're the most precious things in the world. They're the most precious things we have. I'm sure Palestinian parents, many of them, are as outraged as I am at this video. And today I appeal to every father and mother around the world. I ask you to join me in calling for an end to this abuse of children. The Palestinian leadership must stop encouraging children to kill. They must stop encouraging Palestinian parents to call for the death of their own children. It's horrendous. Peace begins with respect. If parents don't respect their own children's lives, how will they respect the lives of their neighbors? We must love all children. They should never be pushed to violence or hate. Join me in educating all children for peace.
So that clip there is quite disheartening. It's from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And it took place, like I was saying, in the West Bank. You've got this little kid, four-year-old, confronted, or told by his father to go confront the Israeli forces there. And he's got a Palestinian flag and he's waving it. And think of the thoughts running through this little four-year-old's mind as he's told to face up to these people with weapons and obey his father's command. And he does. Gets up to them and gives them a high five. He wouldn't even know what he's doing. But give it a couple of years, a couple more years, and that four-year-old becomes a five-year-old, six-year-old, seven, eight, nine, 10, as he goes through the education from the Palestinian leadership, and gradually he too would be willing to be a martyr for the cause. That's just the sad reality of it. Now, there would be, as even the Prime Minister said, many Palestinian parents that would be outraged by that video. There would be. Not every Palestinian believes in sacrificing their children to fight against Jewish scum, as their leaders would call them. Not everyone does. But as we've seen, in multiple nations through the Middle East, it doesn't really matter a lot of the time what the little people say. And, you know, they did vote in democratically Hamas to the Gaza Strip, there would be a lot of people that didn't want Hamas's rule as well. But what we're seeing is, because of the education of these young people, even through the West Bank, we are seeing a growing hatred for Israel. And that, coupled with the absolute corruption of Fatah, would easily push the Palestinian people to vote for Hamas, a group which does definitely run those youth camps that teach how to kill Jews. So it's easy to see, again, how Hamas is going to utilize that education system that has been running for decades now to mobilize its forces in the future in the West Bank. And all it needs to do is grab onto power there, and then you're going to have foreign entities that line up to support Hamas to take over East Jerusalem. It's interesting because up until, as even we've covered in this program, we had the nation of Iran that was supporting, funding, and in every way helping out Hamas fight against Israel in the Gaza Strip. And we've talked about how since the Syrian civil war a few years ago, that support has died down. But Iran has always been extremely opportunistic when it and pragmatic when it comes to violence perpetrated against Israelis. They don't care which organization they support, as long as that organization is striving to destroy Israel. And back even in 2006, 2007, 2008, a lot when these wars were taking place between Hamas and Israel, we had Iran backing it in every way. And we had Iran's leader, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, at the time being an extremely big pusher of it. Now, Iran does want Jerusalem as well. I mean, this is the third holiest site in Islam. Iran sees itself as the protector of Islam, even though the Saudis might have something to say about that. That's how they see themselves. And they want Jerusalem. So you can be sure that as Hamas seeks to take over the West Bank, that Iran will be generous in their support of Hamas in that venture. Mr. Flurry wrote back in 2006, he said, Iran has a passion to seize control of Jerusalem. They have a passion for that, and they want that. And even now, if we check the news, we can see that this Prime Minister, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, he's lining up to go for have another run at the presidency of Iran. And what he's all about, we already know, we've seen it. He's the one that talks about Israel being pushed into the sea, destroyed, wiped off the map. He's the one that sent unlimited funds to Hamas to get rid of Fatah in 2007 in the Gaza Strip and then fight against Israel. Of course, he's got his ruler above him as well. But as we look forward in time to this election in the West Bank, we can really watch for the Iranian connection as well to come back to the fore for Hamas. We're going to take one more break, and then when we come back, we're going to look at one final aspect of this prophecy that shows once again how the dramatic fulfillment is being set up.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We've been talking about Hamas's potential takeover of the West Bank through elections coming up in October and what that means for the prophecy in Zechariah 14 verse 2, which says that half of Jerusalem shall go forth into captivity. Now, when we talk, we just want to cover one more aspect of this prophecy, and that is the fact that the prophecy indicates that there is going to be a violent takeover of Jerusalem. It's going to be violent. The Israelis are going to fight it. Now, understanding Jerusalem's geography, it's good to remember that there is a Jerusalem inside Jerusalem, if I can put it that way. The old city of Jerusalem is right on the border between East and West Jerusalem. Now, before 1967, when the Jordanians held East Jerusalem, they also held the old city. And right in the middle of the old city is the Jewish venerated site, the Wailing Wall, which on the other side you have Islam's third holiest site, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So what we have here is, even if we have a situation where East Jerusalem does fall to the Arabs, what's going to happen about with the old city of Jerusalem? What is going to happen? Now, Mr. Gerald Flory talks about this scenario, and he spoke about, this is from again, Jerusalem in Prophecy that you can read. He said, it seems that the Palestinians could get East Jerusalem minus the Temple Mount without a fight. They might be able to get that with international pressure. They might be able to get East Jerusalem without a fight. And then he says, Zechariah's prophecy implies that there will be an impasse over the Temple Mount, this sacred area to both religions, which the Palestinians resolve by taking East Jerusalem by force. And then he writes, that is why I believe the conservatives could regain control of Israel. They have a stronger will to fight for the land, and they believe it belongs to the Jews. Now, when Mr. Flory said that, at the time, there was a passive left-wing government in power. And Mr. Flory said, looking at this prophecy, it doesn't look like they would put up much of a fight, that passive government. And he said it's likely that conservatives are going to get back in power. That has since happened. Though the pollsters didn't think it would, Mr. Netanyahu, or didn't think he would be able to come back into power, Mr. Netanyahu is the prime minister still of Israel, and he's leading one of the most conservative governments in decades. So this is interesting. We have this final element. We have a government in Israel, that would definitely put up a fight, which, nevertheless, they are going to lose that fight. That's what the prophecy says for East Jerusalem, for the Temple Mount. So we have this Hamas growing in power in the West Bank. We have Iran positioning itself to support that Hamas-led government. And then we also have the right-wing government in Israel. All three of these things point to the fact that half of Jerusalem is indeed close to being taken. Now, again, this doesn't just affect Jerusalem. Half of Jerusalem falling is going to have a disastrous effect on American and British peoples. It's not some event in a far-off land. It's a sign that the destruction of the English-speaking peoples is near. Mr. Flory brings this out, Hosea 5, verse 5. It talks about the coming destruction on Israel, America, and Britain, and it shows that it all happens at the same time. Therefore, if the destruction of Israel, the nation, starts with half of Jerusalem falling, and they all are destroyed, all these nations are destroyed at the same time, then you can be sure that the destruction of America and Britain closely follows. Now, this means that we need to watch Jerusalem. Everyone around the world must watch Jerusalem. That's where we get our indication of how far along in Bible prophecy we are, by looking at just one of these prophecies as we've seen today. Now, saying that half of Jerusalem is going to be cut off doesn't bring me pleasure. I live in Jerusalem. I know many people in Jerusalem who are going to be directly affected by it. That part doesn't bring me joy, or any of us joy. What brings me joy is the knowledge that half of Jerusalem falling it just starts a limited time of suffering. The time of pain, hatred, man ruling over man, half of Jerusalem falling announces the end to that. It announces that it's really close. It shows that in a short amount of time, the senseless violence will end. There'll be no more four-year-old boys sent off on a suicide mission by their fathers to confront Israeli soldiers. That type of thing is going to be over for good. And half of Jerusalem falling is a sign of that. Now, that is what brings me joy. You've been listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You can send your feedback to TD@KPCG, and we'll see you next time.